how's it going out there, wherever you are, wherever you happen to be, if you're driving in your car and listening to this audio style, or if you're watching this on YouTube, hello, from a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment, it's People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I am talking about the present reality of American totalitarianism. And yeah, that's the word I'm using. Totalitarianism. I don't think that we use that word enough. We talk a lot about, you know, Christo-fascism or extreme right authoritarianism. I feel like totalitarianism has a better bite to it. And I also feel like it's what it is. It's also far-right authoritarianism and Christo-fascism. It's all of those things, too. It's an authoritarian theocracy. It's whatever. All the words that we use for it, it is all of those things. But I feel like maybe it's just the word total in totalitarianism, because that's what it feels like. It feels like there is a government takeover by the executive branch where they want total power, total control, total freedom, and immunity to do whatever they want, without repercussion. And that is what is currently happening. That is no longer sort of like the plans. I feel like for the last 9 years of the Trump political era, we've been watching this kind of get built one little Lego at a time. And it's almost like you're watching in slow motion as someone like builds a giant swastika out of Legos, like a giant swastika flag. And, you know, by the time that like the red border was finished and the bottom parts of like the black circle started to get filled in, those among us who are astute and observers of, you know, political history, we're going, I think that's a swastika flag. I think they're building a swastika flag. I think that's what that is. And everyone else went, just wait and see. Hang on. They're not done with it yet. We got to see what it actually looks like. And then they built it a little bit more. And we got like to the, you know, we could see like the bottom part of the black circle and we could see the white of like the under part of the circle. And we're like, that's a swastika flag for sure. 100%. They're building a swastika flag for sure. Let's stop them from building it. It was like, you don't know that. You're such a reactionary. Calm down. Gaul, the sky is not falling. You don't know what it is yet. Let them keep building. And it was sort of like that, you know, like they unveiled Project 2025 and it had all of these outlines for things that they wanted to do. Things that I've talked about on this show, things that I've talked about extensively on my YouTube channel, things like Schedule F, where Trump was saying, we got to get rid of anybody in the administration who's going to be a dissident, anybody who's not going to do exactly what I tell them to do, anybody in the government who doesn't fall in line, I want absolute authority to fire them. And that's what Schedule F was. And there were protections in the federal government that said, like, people can work for the federal government and work for different branches and not lose their job just because they are not sycophants for the president. Like, the framers of our nation, as flawed as they were, saw the problem of having a totalitarian dictator in the executive branch. They intentionally built a system that had built-in checks and balances. There's a reason why there are these different branches of government. And in those different branches and in those different departments and agencies, there are people who are allowed to have their own political opinions and their own political beliefs that do not necessarily align with the executive branch. But Schedule F was a thing in Project 2025 where they said, we want to be able to get rid of anybody who gets in the way of our goals and our projects. And, you know, like there are all these different things that they outlined, things that they are doing right now, where like in the shadows, they were continuing to build their Lego flag. And we were continuing to watch them going, that thing's a swastika. Like, we can see it pretty clearly now. That, you know, and while he was not president, he was on the road campaigning for his 2024 campaign, saying things like, immigrants are poisoning the blood of the country, and that calling his political opponents vermin and saying that they need to be exterminated and talking about the enemy within and all of this language. We were saying, that's Hitler stuff. That's from Mein Kampf. Those are like direct quotes, you know, like the flag was getting made. I really do feel like on Inauguration Day, like we had like maybe like a you know, half-built flag where it was like, anybody who's paying attention knows that that is what it is. It like, at this point, it's like, you can't pretend like it's not that. And then Elon Musk came in, got on stage, and brought the whole other half of the flag and put it together and was like, boom! Yeah, that's what we're doing. That's what we're doing. And we were all like, yeah, there it is. There it is. That's it. Like we've been saying this for years that it was that's obviously what it was. But surely now all of even the Trump faithful, even the most diehard cultists can't deny that now that the Lego thing is complete, now that the jigsaw puzzle, whatever metaphor suits your visual brain the best, now that it's complete and we can all see it, we can all agree that this is what's happening, right? And still, no. What do you think about that, TikTok Digital Studio audience? We're here with the TikTok Digital Studio audience. How's everybody feeling over there? Aaron just said, what do we do? I'm just tired of watching this happen. Me too. Me too. It is so surreal and bizarre to watch this unfold in real time. And what do we do? I don't know. I saw Cory Booker saying something about it on Threads today, and I typed in all caps to him. Impeach him! Now! Do it now! Right now! Do not wait! You have all of the cause you could possibly need to impeach the man. At least begin the process of impeaching. Do something. Anything. Because, you know, this administration is not going to be argued away from what it's doing right now. This is not going to be settled in the arena of intellectual debate. They are not just going to be reasoned with. They are full foot on the gas doing what they are doing. It is what it looks like. Just like that salute on the stage at the inauguration. Do not adjust your television set. Do not adjust your eyes. Don't second guess your brain or your eyes or your ears, what you're seeing and hearing. It is what it looks like. You know, another person, DJ BJ, just said, it's crazy and feels like no one is doing anything. I know, it's wild. It's wild to have all of this historical knowledge, especially now in an era, in the information era, in the era where we were all raised watching movies about this. Every year, there's a movie that comes out about how we gotta know what happened and how it happened, the psychology of how it happened, the psychology of how ordinary people allowed a regime like the Nazi Party in Germany to take over. And it really feels increasingly like a lot of people, especially conservatives, have this really simplistic view of history where they think that what must have happened is that the Nazis just told everybody from the get-go, hey, just so you know, we're evil and we want to do evil things. Are you all cool with us doing evil things if we make the economy a little bit better? And that's how it went down. Because as it's happening, as the exact same thing is happening to them, they're like, yeah, but they're saying that they're doing good things. They're telling us that the things that they're doing are actually good. So, like, you know, what the Nazis were doing was bad, but our government is telling us that the stuff that they're doing is good, so that's different. And it's like, no, yeah, Hitler and the Nazis also told their citizenry that what they were doing was good, that they were getting rid of criminals and, you know, people who were vermin and subhuman. Like, we have been observing stories about the psychological process of conditioning people to accept horrific acts of brutality and inhumanity. My entire life, I've been observing stories about this, and now it is actively happening, and it is so intensely surreal to watch it happening and watch, A, no one in a position of authority step up and do anything about it. Like, I genuinely am like, surely there are members of our military who are concerned about this, who must be having conversations about this, right? Of saying, we can't let the country be taken over by a totalitarian oligarchy of evil people who want to get rid of due process, right? Surely someone in a position of authority must be doing something. It can't just be a bunch of randoms like me on the internet screaming into the void, right? But that's sure what it looks like. Today, more specifically, that's sort of my abstract picture from a bird's eye view of the present reality of American totalitarianism. But let's go in on what people are specifically talking about today. It's Tuesday, April 15th, tax day, as I am recording this episode. That's obviously not when the episode will make it to the viewer and the listener, wherever you're listening to this. But in this moment right now, what everyone is talking about is the reality of how people in this country right now are being kidnapped, held without due process, and shipped off in many cases to El Salvadoran prisons with absolutely nightmarish conditions. If you've actually seen photos of these prisons, it's horrifying. It's an absolute living nightmare to imagine being shipped off to one of these places. And this has been going on for several weeks. This has been going on for a while. And, you know, again, it's like I did an episode a while back about incrementalism and escalation. The idea that if you, you know, sort of incrementally ramp up your cruelty and your brutality and incrementally sort of shift your talking points of your justifications for the brutality that you're enforcing at the state level and at the, you know, federal level, people will kind of be more complacent and docile as it happens and as it unfolds. The escalation in this second administration is going so much faster than I think even the most terrified of us thought it could. If I'm being completely honest, I think even I thought it would take a minimum of like 6 months for him to start being able to implement the beginnings of some of this stuff. I don't think I had a full grasp of how much chaos and carnage he was going to be able to inflict in just the first 100 days of his administration. The escalation has been exponentially faster than anything I think we've witnessed in the Trump political era so far. And I do think that that's also by design. I think that once you arrive at the place of going mask off and standing on stage and saying, yes, we are indeed Nazis, you were right about that all these years, you kind of have to start moving at a faster pace because you have to start moving at sort of a dizzying pace where people kind of can't keep up. Because I remember not long ago, just like several short weeks ago, when they were just floating the idea of shipping deportees off to these El Salvadoran prison camps, like these torture camps with nightmarish conditions. And I remember when they were floating the concept of this, I remember Trump faithful in the cult saying, that's not going to happen. He's not going to do that. I have a person in my life who's very close to me, who I'm really struggling. It's a person who I fear has been taken in by this ideology, who I had a big fight with him about this. I said, I'm really not okay with the fact that you are, at the very least, acting as an apologist and a supporter of a Nazi regime, whether you know that's what you're doing or not. I see as kind of a distinction without a difference. And he said, I don't think that they're Nazis. We have a difference of opinion on that. And I said, how? When the guy who bought the election, when the richest man in the world stands on stage and does a completely unambiguous Nazi salute, then goes to a Nazi rally in Germany and tells them that they shouldn't be ashamed of their Nazi history. And when the president is constantly quoting Mein Kampf and doing things in his policies that are directly out of Hitler's playbook, how do you not see them as Nazis? And his response to me was, well, nobody's getting kidnapped yet. You know, like people aren't getting, he literally said this. He said, people aren't being killed. People aren't being like, you know, thrown into like trains and shipped off to camps yet. And I said, yeah, yet. Yet is the operative word there. I said, you know, that's going to happen, right? Like, it's just a matter of time. That's going to happen. And he said, I don't think it will. We'll see. Honestly, I genuinely thought at the time that it would I'd have to wait at least a few months. I didn't think that it was, it literally started happening like 10 days later after I had this conversation with that person. I mean, it just, it blows my mind that even today, Tuesday, April 15th, it seems like today is the first day that everyone's finally kind of ready to talk about it. And this has been going on for weeks and weeks and weeks at this point. But there's such a deluge of insane shit on a daily basis in every Trump administration. And even when Biden was president, he managed to make a lot of hay with his craziness that you kind of like need time to catch up and get all of your ducks in a row and sort through the mess of stories to try to make sense of everything that you're hearing. And I think we're just finally kind of at a point where we're ready to go, okay, I think we're starting to understand what this means and why it's scary and why it's bad. But it's like, it just happened so fast, so quick. It wasn't just this person in my life. It was like post after post of people being like, we're not actually going to ship people off. And then once they did started shipping people off to the El Salvadoran prison camps, they said, well, it's only illegal immigrants. And that's the new line, is it's like, it's just people who've committed crimes. And then all these these reports came out that it was like, oh no, like 75% of the people that we've sent there actually have no criminal record and had legal documentation. And now it's like, okay, well, but they'll still, they won't even concede that. They're still just like, nope, they're criminals. They're criminals who broke the law and they don't deserve due process. And that's sort of where we're currently at with all of it. Where we're currently at in a general sense is the Trump cultists who were once saying they're not going to do that are now saying it's okay that they're doing that because these people broke the law, they're illegals, they don't belong here, they're criminals, even though it's been proven that in many cases that's not even true. And what we're trying to make clear to these people, what, you know, the big kind of phrase of the moment is due process, kind of rule of law, right? Like you need to go through a proper channel to deal with criminals in a way that makes sense, that has some sort of checks and balances on it, that honors the basic human dignity of the person who is being accused of a crime. Even though that person is being accused of doing something illegal, they still have a right to a process where they can prove or disprove their innocence. You know, that has to be a part of the process. The big focus of all of this. So we've got this huge problem of people being shipped off en masse. It's happening right now. People with legal documentation, people who have not committed crimes without due process being shipped to terrifying, absolutely terrifying prison camps. The focus right now is on a man named Kilmar Abrego Garcia, a Maryland man who was kidnapped by the government and deported without due process, like everybody else. The reason why this is the case that has everyone's attention, we're going to try to just sort of walk through an abridged timeline of the Kilmar Garcia case. What we basically know, if you try to read all of the different articles on this, if you try to read the White House's perspective and the DOJ's perspective and the perspective of the Supreme Court and the perspective of the district judge who first got involved, here's kind of what we know. Kilmar is picked up by ICE, detained without due process, and they begin the process of deporting. El Salvador claims him and says, you know, we think that that's a gang member, a member of the gang MS-13, and they say you should send him over here to our prison camp. We do that. And while we're in that process, a district judge, Judge Paula Zinis, I'm not sure, I should have figured out how to pronounce that name beforehand, X-I-N-I-S of Maryland, gets involved and asks the DOJ to provide evidence of this man's crime. They couldn't provide any evidence or ample evidence. What they had is they had like stories of people who said that he had been involved with MS-13 in New York years ago, even though there's no record of Kilmar ever living in New York at any time since he arrived in America as a teenager. This man has lived in America for a very long time, by the way. What his family says is that he fled El Salvador to get away from gang life because he wanted to flee the gang violence of El Salvador, came to America, became, you know, over the course of the years has jumped through many legal hoops to be able to stay here legally, has gotten work visas and all these different kinds of things. What we know about him is he's a father of three and a union worker who, you know, he has a job, he pays taxes. This is a person who is doing his best to participate in American regular life. You know, he wasn't born here, but he's doing his best to do what he needs to do to have some kind of legal passing documentation to allow him to live here. This judge is asking for evidence that he has committed heinous crimes, evidence that he is indeed a member of this gang. The DOJ is not able to provide ample evidence of this. And even in one of the filings that the White House provides, there is a lawyer for the White House who describes the deportation of Kilmar Abrego Garcia as an administrative error, basically taking accountability for it and saying, we messed up. We made a mistake. Judge Paula Zinis reads this as, okay, y'all fucked up. You don't have ample evidence to detain and deport this man. You also denied him of due process, and you shouldn't have done what you did. You need to get him back here so that he can stand trial and we can actually sort this out. The White House, as you know by now, refuses. They just say, nah, we're not going to do that. Already, we're fucked. Like, already, we are cooked. When the White House is not listening to the judiciary, when the executive branch is just saying, We don't care. We're going to do whatever we want to do and fuck off. And when they're not even able to provide, you know, substantive evidence for what they're doing, we're cooked. Like, already it's just like the escalation is off the charts. This is really, really bad. This is the executive branch announcing to the country and to the world, we have gone rogue. We're doing our own thing now. So this gets kicked up to the Supreme Court. If you don't know already, the Supreme Court in the United States is heavily conservative. It's a huge problem here. It happened because we allowed Donald Trump to win in 2016. It was a massive consequence of the first Trump presidency that we now have a conservative-weighted Supreme Court. This gets kicked up to a Supreme Court that is full of justices who were appointed by Donald Trump himself. And they come back with, like, not a 7-2 decision, not a 6-3 decision, not a 5-4 decision, but a 9-0 unanimous decision that, yes, indeed, Judge Palazinas of Maryland found correctly that the DOJ was not providing ample evidence of any guilt on Kilmer Abrego Garcia's part. That because of that, because of this, the fact that they admitted to making an administrative error, they need to begin the process of bringing this man home. They need to offer him due process. He is afforded due process under the Constitution of the United States. He was deprived his constitutional basic human rights to due process. This is a heavily weighted Supreme Court saying this. What does the DOJ do? They say, fuck you. No dice. And not only that, but they just kind of like pretend like the Supreme Court found in their favor. The DOJ's reading of this, the basically the executive branch's reading of this, the White House's reading of this is, well, yeah, the Supreme Court said that we need to begin the process of bringing him home, but they also said that they don't have the authority to infringe on the executive branch's authority over foreign matters, basically saying that the executive branch has the authority to unilaterally determine what it wants to do about foreign affairs, and that they cannot infringe on that authority. But here's the big question is, so the White House is basically saying, what they're saying there is, because the man is in El Salvador, and this now constitutes a foreign affair between the El Salvadoran government and the American government, the executive branch can't get involved. It is the jurisdiction of the executive branch now. But the problem is it actually a matter of foreign affairs? Or did they make it a matter of foreign affairs by deporting a person with legal documentation with no criminal record without due process? So it was not a foreign affair. It was actually a matter of a domestic issue where they made a mistake and accidentally arrested a guy and detained him without due process, did not offer him a chance to provide evidence of his innocence, and sent him off, you know, without a trial, without the ability to stick up for himself or you know, provide any evidence for or against his involvement with MS-13 or his history. So that's sort of like the highlighted story in all of this, is this kind of refusal from the executive branch to go along with the orders of the judicial branch of government. That's where we're at with all of that. Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Austin, who's editing the podcast right now. There has been an update to this timeline that I wanted to put into the video here. Today, it is Thursday, April 17th, and this is kind of breaking news that's happening right as I'm editing the podcast. A federal appeals court on Thursday, that's today, denied the Trump administration's emergency request to block a judge's order requiring the U.S. government to return Kilmer Abrego Garcia. I am reading this off of a front page of Fox News. Okay, this is Fox News reporting this. This is everywhere right now. So if you're keeping score in the timeline of the Garcia case, that is four chances now the DOJ has had to make their case against Kilmer Garcia, and four times that they have been denied. There was one that I missed in my initial breakdown of the timeline. So it went to Judge Zinis in Maryland. She said, you got to send him home. Then there was an initial review panel that the DOJ kicked it to, and that review panel before it went to SCOTUS, they also found against the DOJ and said, yep, she's right, you've got to bring him home. Then it went up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court went 9-0 in favor of Judge Zenas and said, yeah, you absolutely need to bring him home. They appealed again, did an emergency appeal to say, please don't make us bring him home. Please let us keep doing totalitarian Nazi shit. And once again, they have lost. But that's not going to stop Caroline Leavitt or Pam Bondi from getting on TV and telling you and telling the American people that they have established firm evidence that Garcia absolutely is a member of MS-13 and a dangerous person who is not coming home. You know, that he's, you know, he's a terrorist who deserves whatever punishment is coming to him. If the government actually had established firm evidence of these allegations, then why the fuck have they lost four times in a row? If they, it's the exact same as the big lie of the 2020 election. If they had firm evidence that Joe Biden stole the election, then how come they lost 60 lawsuits? These people are liars. That's what they do. They are fucking liars who lie. So when you're talking to your conservative friends and family members and they start telling you, oh, no, it's been established. There's proof that he's MS-13. There's proof that he's a criminal. They're lying. They're taking the word of liars. But here's what's more important, and I'm going to talk about this more going on in this episode of the podcast. This is going to be coming up, but it bears repeating as often as I can repeat it. And this is what's really, really the most important thing, because there's been another update in this case. It came out that that Kilmar Garcia may have been involved in a domestic violence dispute a few years back, that his wife may have called in a domestic violence, you know, call, and that he might have been, you know, he might have been involved in a domestic violence dispute. Again, these are all just things that are alleged. And again, I don't actually really give a shit. This is what's really important, is it doesn't actually matter whatever he has done in his life. It doesn't matter if he was affiliated with MS-13 in New York after he came to America. It doesn't matter if he did, you know, abuse his wife physically. He is still afforded due process. That is the important thing to remember. So when you're talking to your conservative friends and family members who are listening to, you know, totalitarian villain Pam Bondi, who literally looks like she was cast out of central casting to be like the key villain on the new season of The Handmaid's Tale. She's a terrifying woman. When you're listening to her, when you're listening to Caroline Leavitt, and they're saying that they have established firm evidence of his guilt, it doesn't fucking matter. They need to be able to prove it in court. In this country, you do not get to kidnap people in IKEA parking lots and ship them off to foreign prison camps without due process. Jeffrey Dahmer got due process. Charles Manson got due process. Bill Cosby got due process. People, criminals get due process in the United States, even criminals who weren't born here. You need to have your day in court, because how can you prove whether you're a criminal or not if you don't have due process? That's what's important. It does not fucking matter. All of the noise around what Kilmar Garcia may or may not have done is not important. It's irrelevant. A, the DOJ has failed to prove their case against the man four times now, four times in a row in federal court. And B, it doesn't matter anyway, because they shipped the guy off to a foreign torture facility before he ever had a chance to have his day in court. And there is no legal basis for that in the American justice system. That is simply a symptom of a constitutional crisis. That is a symptom of a rapidly decaying government that is being taken over by a totalitarian regime, period. Yeah, so the question with all of this is, it all comes back to due process, right? Like, that's the big thing here, because without due process, then the government can, and this, I'm not the first person you've heard say this, everybody's saying this right now, and it's true, the government can just say anything about anyone and ship them off to anywhere, which is what's currently happening. This is not just a hypothetical. They're currently doing it with people who fit the profile of illegal immigrants, even though a lot of those people have been shown to actually have legal documentation, but they're doing it to, what I mean by that is brown people. They're doing it to like brown and Hispanic people and shipping them off. And it's just sort of a matter of testing the waters. But, you know, the way that the debate around Kilmar Abrego Garcia gets muddied is, it gets muddied when, you know, we in the citizenry, the proletariat, when we're arguing amongst ourselves online about whether or not he is innocent or guilty. And this is what conservatives kind of want to deflect to. They want to deflect to, like, well, the guy's a member of MS-13. I don't care what happens to him. He's a criminal. And they want to have a debate over whether or not he deserves what he's getting. That's not the actual question. It's not actually up to us as the citizenry to determine whether Kilmer Abrego-Garcia has done anything illegal or not. We are not the Department of Justice. We are not lawyers and justices. We are just average citizens. It's a complete distraction and deflection to get bogged down trying to argue about whether or not this man has done anything illegal. So don't let people pull you into that distraction. That's where they really want to focus right now, is like, oh, who cares? And that's one thing, is like, it doesn't actually matter. It doesn't actually matter whether he's guilty or innocent of the things that he's accused of. I mean, even though the Department of Justice has had a few different opportunities now to make a case as to his guilt and has not been able to do that. They've had opportunities to present a case about his guilt. They haven't been able to do it. They do it at press conferences. Caroline Leavitt is all too happy to stand in front of the press and say, this guy actually is a member of MS-13. It was confirmed by the president of El Salvador, so I don't want to hear any other questions about this. But That has not been proven in court. It demonstrably actually has failed to be proven in court. They've tried to prove it in court and have not been able to. By the way, the lawyer who wrote in one of those filings that it was an administrative error has been put on leave by the White House. They kicked that guy to the curb for admitting that they fucked up. So again, this is, you know, Schedule F that we talked about at the beginning of the show. Anybody who doesn't fall in line, that guy was not supposed to admit that they fucked up. He was supposed to toe the line and say, yep, for sure, he's a criminal and he deserves to be deported. But so that's one thing, is like, it doesn't actually matter whether he's innocent or guilty, because criminals in this country, people who are living in this country, people who are inside of this country, deserve due process. They are owed due process. And yes, that is people with legal documentation and people without legal documentation. The founders, when they were writing in who gets certain rights into the Constitution, made a distinction here. I saw this video on TikTok of a guy debating, and I was like, oh, I love that. I love this little piece. He pointed out that they use, as a, you know, kind of linguistic distinction, to be specific in the framing of the Bill of Rights, they use two different terms describing people. They use the term citizens and the term persons. When they use the term citizens, they are talking about rights that apply to only people who are legal citizens of the United States. When they use the term persons, they're talking about basic human rights that apply to any person residing within the borders of the United States. And that includes illegal immigrants. That includes people who have broken the law. That includes criminals. That includes people who have legal documentation who were not born here. That includes everyone. That's just people in general. So there is this linguistic distinction made specifically to make a distinction between citizens and persons, because sometimes they'd say, you know, things like, you have to be a citizen in order to run for president of the United States, because we don't want someone who kind of immigrated here from somewhere else bringing in, I guess, you know, dangerous foreign ideas running for president. I don't know. Maybe we need to revisit that thing too. But they would make these distinctions for stuff like that. But then they'd say, but there are other people who might be residing here, and we still want to have laws that apply to them too. There is no classification of person currently in the United States who falls under just like non-human, where there's just no rights that apply to that person, where there is no person, there's no classification in the Bill of Rights for a kind of person who just is not afforded any rights whatsoever, where it's just like, oh, you are a non-person, you're a non-human, and we don't have to actually worry about anything when it comes to you. Everybody within the borders and jurisdiction of the United States has at least some basic human rights, or at least they're supposed to. And one of those is the right to due process. The reason why that's actually what matters, and not whether Kilmer Garcia is guilty or not, the reason why what matters is due process is because if they can just ship people off to foreign torture camps without due process, without having to establish in a court of law proof of that person's guilt, then they can do it to anybody. And this is what conservatives are either willfully not understanding or just not understanding out of like a really general ignorance, because we do know that these people tend to be pretty fucking stupid. And that might just be what it is, or they might just be not wanting to get it because they're just too dug in, sunk cost fallacy, who knows what it is at this point. But they don't seem to be able to grasp the fact that if this can happen to people with legal documentation, with no proof of ever committing a crime, it can happen to anyone. That's the whole point, because they'll keep coming back to this thing of like, well, he committed crimes. These people are criminals. They're shipping off criminals. They broke the law. They're illegals. How the fuck do you know that without due process? How do you know that a person is a criminal if they have not gone through due process? How do you know that a person is an illegal immigrant if they have not been given due process, if it has not been established and proven in court? How do you know that? If it's just Caroline Leavitt telling you so, if it's just Steve Miller telling you so, that's nothing. They can say that about anyone, and they will. Again, the escalation, the incrementalism, the idea that this can't happen to white people. Like, the idea, like, the fact that, like, obviously they're starting with people, who white conservatives, white Christian conservatives, are comfortable dehumanizing. They've been priming them to be more and more comfortable dehumanizing these people. Priming them as, you know, all the rhetoric about they're poisoning the blood of the country, they're vermin. They've been priming them not to think of them as human. Again, this is all part of getting them to think, well, if people deserve basic human rights and citizens have, you know, extra special rights, well, then non-people deserve no rights. It's the exact same playbook. It is straight out of Nazi Germany in the 1930s. It's identical. It is no different. This is where we go back to like the beginning of the episode, when all of the stuff that we watched, all of the movies that we've watched, all the books that we've read about how people were primed psychologically to accept people being put in trains and shipped off to concentration camps. All of that was about the dehumanization of the other, dehumanizing queer people, dehumanizing people of color, dehumanizing the Jewish population, making them less than human, people who do not need or deserve any kind of process of accountability from the government. The government can do as it likes with them with impunity because they are not people. They do not have basic human dignity or basic human needs. They don't deserve any of that. And once you can get people to kind of accept that, you can get them to kind of accept anything at that point. I think that the problem a lot of conservatives are having right now is recognizing the train that we're currently on. This is a metaphor that I use in addiction a lot. So I'm a sober guy. I've been sober for almost 7 years, and I work with guys who are new in sobriety a lot. And this happened just yesterday. I was talking to a new guy who was like 20 years old, this young kid who was in a treatment facility that I was speaking at. And afterward, he came up to me after I spoke, and he said, "Thanks for everything you said. I really got a lot out of it." And I said, "Cool, man. How long have you been here?" And he said, "I've been here for about 4 days." And I said, "All right. Okay. So new." I said, "Is this your first time in a treatment facility?" He said, "Yeah, it is." And I said, "Cool. So how are you feeling? Are you getting something out of it so far? I mean, you're kind of crawling out of your skin right now, 4 days. That's pretty new." And he said, "You know, I feel very humble to be here." And he goes, "And I'm definitely getting a lot out of like the meetings." And he goes, "But I'm also realizing that like everybody else here has a way crazier story than I do. Everybody else's story is like way more intense than mine. Like people have been through some like really crazy shit and I haven't been through that much." And I was like, "Yeah, I get that. You're only 20 years old and sometimes it's hard to like really rack up a lot of crazy war stories when you're a young kid. Some people do a lot of damage by the time they're 20 with addiction." But like, I was like, "I get that." And I go, "I felt the same way when I came in." And this is true. And this happens to addicts all the time. You'll kind of come in and you'll start going to rooms where other addicts are sharing their stories, and you'll start to hear stories that are way crazier than your own story. You'll hear like backstories and origin stories where you're like, "Wow, that person has a much better motivation for their addiction than I do for mine." And then you'll hear like a story of someone's bottom where you're like, "That's a way more intense bottom than mine is." And what your brain will start to do is it'll start to go, "Maybe it's actually not that bad. Like maybe my problem is actually not that bad because I don't have as crazy of a story as these people." what I started to realize about addiction, because I was a chronic relapser. I relapsed and relapsed and relapsed a lot over my first year that I was trying to get sober. What I realized about addiction is it's just a one-way train that you're on. And there are progressive, incrementally worse destinations on that train. It's a train that only moves in one direction, and it only gets progressively worse as it goes. Each stop that it goes to is a stop that's worse. And some people don't get off the train until they are unhoused, until they are living out of their car, until they've been living out of their car for a year, until they lose the car, until they've been living on the street for several years, until they find themselves, they sort of come out of a blackout one night and they're, you know, doing sex acts under a bridge to score crack. And that's when they finally go, I've got to do something about this. I've got to get myself into a treatment facility. Some people don't get off the train until that point, but there is only one final destination for the train, and it's hospitals, institutions, and death. So you're either going to wind up in a hospital. Someone's either going to take you somewhere where you're going to be forced to detox. You're going to wind up in an institution like a rehab or a prison, or you're going to die. And those are the three final destinations of that train for most people. The thing about people like me, and you know, is like, if you can recognize you're on that train before you get to, you know, unhoused or living out of the car, or before you get to some of those worst consequences, you can get off earlier. Like, you don't need to stay in until you get to those worst destinations. You're allowed to step off the train as soon as you recognize that that's the train you're on. And the reason I'm making this analogy is it seems like a lot of American conservatives need to see it as clear as it can possibly be. They need to start seeing people having like some sort of denoted government marker of other, you know, stitched onto their clothing. And they need to start seeing those people being given government issued clothing and then being, you know, put en masse into like train cars and shipped off to prison camps. And they need to start seeing it happen to like white people. They need to start seeing it happen to their family members and their friends and their neighbors. And it needs to like really hit home in a real way before they'll realize that they've been on this train for a while now, that we've been telling them, this is the train you're on. And we need to get the fuck off. It feels like for a lot of these people, they're not going to be open to the idea of getting off the train until the train is at it one of its worst destinations it could possibly be. It feels like historically for this brand of totalitarian far right authoritarian fascism, that's how it has to go, right? Like, it has to get that bad before people are willing to go, okay, whoops, we fucked up. And then you have a 100-year period where the entire country of Germany is constantly going, ooh, okay, it's like the entire country is going to AA for 100 years and going like, fuck, we can never do that again. We can never do those drugs ever again. That was really fucked up. We got to make sure that the whole world knows how that happened to us, how we were conditioned to let that happen. And we got to make sure that we stop that from happening. And then it just fucking happens again because human beings are terrible at learning lessons. And that's why I think that perhaps the most terrifying thing happening right now is the way that conservative America is responding to our current state of affairs. The way that they are not alarmed at all by what's happening, the way that they are justifying what is happening. I you know, made the mistake of getting on Threads today and reading different responses from conservatives to posts about what's happening, about the kidnapping, the blackbagging of people with legal documentation, the denial of due process, of shipping people off to nightmare realms and just saying, adios, there you go. That's what you get for, I guess, you know, existing. And I was so shocked at the callousness of the, I mean, obviously, like, I shouldn't be shocked by conservative America anymore. I should know better, but I was. It was really crazy to read their responses. I wrote this post where I said, conservatives, do you think that the Nazi regime in the 1930s told its citizenry that they were detaining people who had committed no crimes and were completely innocent? They lied to them. They convinced them they were detaining criminals and subhuman vermin who didn't deserve any kind of basic human rights or dignity. You are falling for the exact same playbook, step for step, line for line. It's so insane to watch this unfold in real time. And that's true, right? Like, that's the basis of it, is all of these people are going, well, this is different from what happened in Germany in the 1930s, because they were just shipping off innocent people. They were shipping off, you know, men, women, and children who had done nothing wrong and sending them off to death camps. That's not what Trump's doing. Trump is shipping off people who are criminals. He's shipping off bad people, gang members. And it's like, how do you know that? Because he told you so? Because that's what Caroline Leavitt says? Because that's what Steve Miller says? How do you know that without due process? And they're just accepting their word for it and not realizing that that's also how it was sold to German citizens in the 1930s. They didn't just stand up and go, hey, so here's our plan. We're just going to ship innocent people off to death camps and gas them in chambers. That's what we're going to do. Everybody cool with that? For no reason other than we're just kind of bigoted toward them. We just don't really like them. No, they told them, these people are a huge problem in our country. These people are the enemy within. These people are criminals. These people are enemies to the state. These people are subhuman vermin. They told them, don't worry, these are bad people we're getting rid of. Your country is going to be stronger without them. You're going to be safer and stronger without them. They lied to them. They got them to go along with it by lying to them. And that's exactly what's happening now. And these people, I mean, my God, this guy responded to me and said, wow, you absolute moron, comparing Trump's deportation policies to Nazi Germany? That's a brain-dead take. Nazis exterminated millions in death camps. Deporting illegal immigrants is just enforcing borders. Your history knowledge is a dumpster fire, and your hyperbole is so unhinged, it's practically orbiting Pluto. Get a grip, stop crying wolf, and maybe crack a book before spewing this garbage. It's not the same playbook. It's not even the same library. Pathetic. This guy's got a great screen name, by the way. Ukfe Uye. Very clever. I mean, you know, clever for a Trump cultist, I gotta say. But yeah, it is the same playbook, dipshit. It is. It's the exact same playbook. My God. Like, again, the fact that you're just like, well, he was doing it to people who didn't deserve it, who are innocent people. Trump's just doing it to people who deserve it. That's how he got those. How the fuck do you think Hitler got people to go along with it? He told them they deserved it. He convinced them that they deserved it. That's what's happening to you. You are being convinced that these people deserve it. And there's all these different ways that I was seeing people, you know, justify that they deserve it. So many people were going with the MS-13 thing. So many people are just taking this hook, line, and sinker. Again, the DOJ has had multiple opportunities to establish proof in court to satisfy the standard of proof for a district judge and the Supreme Court of the United States that this man was indeed a violent and dangerous member of MS-13, and they were not able to do that. They were not able to establish that proof, but still so many people just running with this lie. And who knows if it's a lie? Again, it doesn't fucking matter. The guy deserves due process, but as far as it goes right now, we have not actually established this, and so many people are just running with it. He was MS-13. He deserves it. He was MS-13 over and over and over again. MS-13, I guess if you think the MS-13 members are the same as Jews, if that's what you're saying, you know, just this disingenuous, bad faith bullshit from these people. And again, too, I kept seeing responses from people who just don't understand what due process is and why it's important, and that's so scary. This guy said, if you're not an illegal alien, nobody is going to deport you. Stop being silly. Again, how do you prove that you are not an illegal alien if you do not get due process? If ICE shows up to your house and handcuffs you and throws you in a van and they fly you to an El Salvadoran torture camp and shave your head before you have a chance to meet with a lawyer, before you have a chance to be in front of a judge, if all of that happens before any due process can happen, how do you establish that you are not what they say you are? They can say you are anything. They can say, this guy's a murderer. This guy's a serial sex offender. This guy is a pedophile. They can say whatever they want to say about you if you do not have due process. That's the whole fucking point. I saw a handful of people post this sort of hypothetical that they were posing to Trump supporters, where they were saying things like, Trump supporters, if I was deported for my liberal political views to El Salvador, would you defend me? Saw a lot of different people posting something like this, like, if you knew that I was simply deported for my political views, would you step up and say, that's wrong, and would you defend me? Again and again, the Trump supporters in the comments refused to answer the hypothetical. They refused to just say, like, yeah, I'd defend you for that. They kept going back to trying to make it about Kilmer Garcia, and they were like, yeah, but he wasn't just deported for his political views. He was deported because he's a gang member. He was deported because he was illegally here. He was deported because that's where he's from, is El Salvador. And it's like, that's not the question. That's not the question being asked. The question being asked is, if I was deported simply because of my political views, would you then step up and say, okay, that's not right? And they couldn't answer that question. But again, even that question is not actually just a hypothetical. We have lots of people being detained right now, people with legal documentation and no criminal record who are being detained simply because of their political views. That's what's happened to Mahmoud Khalil. That's the whole case there, is this guy just was organizing protests to stand in solidarity with the cause for Palestinian liberation. And because of that, the government labeled him a Hamas sympathizer and a terrorist and arrested him and detained him without due process, denied him of his due process. The government says that he has ties to Hamas. They have not been able to prove that. What the government is detaining Mahmoud Khalil for is having political opinions that they do not like. Again, they're doing it with brown people first to just sort of test the waters. Will their cult go along with it? Will their followers support them and let them get away with this shit? And so far, the answer is a resounding yes. So this is not just some hypothetical that's being posed. And a lot of these people keep saying that. They're like, stop posing these bad faith hypotheticals. Stop pretending like this is something that could actually happen. It is fucking happening. We're not pretending like it's something that could potentially hypothetically happen. It is actively taking place. It is actively happening. People are being detained because of their political views and held without due process. So the question is not simply a hypothetical. The question is, okay, pretend I'm not accused of being a member of MS-13. Pretend I'm not an immigrant. Pretend I'm just a person who was born here, who is detained without due process because of my political views, and the government tells you that I'm a dangerous radical. Like, are you going to step in and say, okay, this guy should be allowed to have a day in court, right? He should be allowed to kind of prove whether he is a dangerous terrorist radical who has ties to terrorist organizations, right? He should, like, are you going to step up and do that, or are you just going to watch them ship me off to a foreign prison camp and say, you know, toodaloo? And actually, you know, kind of refreshingly, weirdly, a lot of people were willing to just respond, no, I wouldn't stick up for you. I'd be happy to see you go. People were saying stuff like, no, because I'd be the one arguing for them to deport you. Another guy said, a guy whose username is BoltGun40K, Jesus fucking Christ, said, I wouldn't care if some white liberal gets deported. The more the merrier. The same with Hispanics. And you know, I don't know, there is something about these comments, like I said, that's kind of refreshing, because at least it's like, okay, there's the truth. At least I'm dealing with someone who's being honest about what a fucking terrifying shitbag they are, that they're incredibly racist, and that they do not care about the rule of law, do not care about the Bill of Rights, do not care about basic human dignity, basic human rights, do not care about, you know, honoring separate, you know, branches of government and checks and balances. They do just want to live in a totalitarian regime where the Trump administration can get rid of anyone that they don't like. Another person said, liberal or far left extremist? Because if you're the latter, adios, muchacho. The fuck? Okay, so if I'm a liberal, I can stay, but if I'm a far leftist, adios, muchacho. Again, thanks for the honesty, but like, that's what it is. It's also crazy because some of the Trump supporters say, this is a crazy hypothetical, you guys are crying wolf, this isn't actually happening, and then their friends in the comments right under them are like, oh no, no, I absolutely would support that. I absolutely am totally cool with that. So in, you know, it's like in the same breath, one of them goes, no, we'd never do that. Come on, that's not happening. Stop pretending these things are happening. Stop being silly. And then right underneath them, another Trump cultist is like, oh please, I would love it if the Trump administration started rounding up people I disagree with politically and shipping them off to torture camps. And again, I can't stress this enough. It's not a hypothetical. It's already happening. We're already there. They've already completed the Lego swastika flag. It is what it is. It is exactly what it looks like. So many people called my post fear-mongering, and these different posts, they keep calling it fear-mongering. Stop fear-mongering. Again, it's not fear-mongering. It's not fear-mongering if it's actually happening. It's a real thing. We're talking about a real thing. We're talking about the real reason why due process is important. The real reason why the Bill of Rights is important. The real reason why the founders and framers of this country, flawed as they were, shaped it the way that they did. Because of this exact situation. We're talking, the guy who, you know, that guy who called my historical knowledge as a dumpster fire. It's like, holy shit. Holy shit, the projection and the lack of self-awareness. Like, it is step for step, bar for bar. It's the exact scenario. It is escalating at a terrifying rate, and it is the exact thing. This is not just fear-mongering. I'm gonna wrap up my portion of the yapping by reading this thing that's been making the rounds. Max Burns posted this on X, I believe, maybe posted it on Threads, but this is from the U.S. Holocaust Museum. It's a quote that says, "What distinguishes a concentration camp from a prison, in the modern sense, is that it functions outside of a judicial system. The prisoners are not indicted or convicted of any crime by judicial process." And that's it, right? Like, there it is, you know, from the Holocaust Museum, from the place where we get all of our, you know, our knowledge, that kind of the height of authority of knowledge on how a Holocaust happens, on how fascist regimes come to power, on how totalitarianism psychologically takes a hold of a population. And there it is. Like, that's the difference. Even if these people are criminals, even if they are members of MS-13, even if they are here illegally, they are owed due process. They are owed a judicial review of their case. It needs to be proven in court that they have done what the DOJ is claiming they have done. If that does not exist, then we're fucked, dude. Period. Not fear-mongering, not posting hypotheticals. This is where we're at. If that does not exist, if you can ship people off to a prison that looks like that without due process, then we're cooked. Oh, and by the way, I haven't even mentioned yet all of the talk about homegrowns. I can't believe I haven't mentioned this yet, but Trump has said multiple times over the last few weeks that he wants to start sending what he's calling, and I call them homegrowns. He's really proud of this nickname. And what he means specifically by homegrowns, this is not me just guessing, he's said this very specifically several times now, is criminals who are legal citizens of the United States. So again, throw out all your bullshit about how you dehumanize people who are illegals and people who don't have a right to be here in the first place, even though the Bill of Rights does afford those people rights as well. Okay, if you only believe that citizens get rights, well, he's already saying it. The same way that he said, what if we started shipping people to El Salvador in prisons? And you all said, he's not actually going to do that. And then just a few days later, he started doing that and has been doing it ever since. Him saying, I want to ship legal citizens there as well, he's going to do that. It's going to happen, and probably sooner than we all think. I think it's already happening. I think there are people who with fully legal documentation, who like have every right to live here legally, who have already been shipped over there. Hey, it's Austin who is editing the podcast, and you're never going to believe it, but there's been another update. As I was editing the show, I was kind of scrolling on Threads, taking a break, and I saw this story. A Florida man named Juan Carlos Lopez Gomez has been detained, and he was born in America. He is an American citizen. So this thing that I was just saying is going to happen, and sooner than we probably think. I said that 2 days ago, and it happened. It's happened. This man's mom went down to the immigration office and said, she showed him his American birth certificate, his American Social Security card, said, my son is an American citizen. He was detained and held by ICE without due process, and they were refusing to release him. They were refusing to offer him due process and his basic human rights under the Constitution of the United States, and he is a citizen. So all of those comments I just showed you, all of those Trump supporters saying, oh, you crazy liberals with your crazy hypotheticals, always crying wolf, always making up scenarios. This isn't even going to happen. Stop talking about stuff that's never going to happen. He's never going to deport legal American citizens. Even though he was already talking about doing that as they were writing those comments, well, now it's happening. So I think we need to talk once again about escalationism. I think we need to talk one more time about why it is that Trump 2.0 seems like it's moving so much faster than the first Trump administration. And I have this analogy that I'm kicking around that I think helps to visualize this pretty well. Imagine that you're shoplifting from a store like, you know, Target or Walmart. And you've got a big giant trench coat on, and the goal is to get as much loot into your trench coat as you possibly can and make it out of the front door without getting caught. So for the, you know, instead of like just running like a maniac into the store and just grabbing as much stuff as you can, you try to just walk casually through the store and piece by piece start putting things into your pockets, maybe putting things into like a satchel that you brought in with you, but you do it really cool. You're incrementally getting thicker and thicker as you add more and more pieces of loot to your, you know, your ensemble, so you're incrementally getting heavier and upping the risk that you're going to get noticed and going to get caught. You're escalating things, but you're still moving at a slow, methodical, strategic rate. You're still moving at a speed that, like, you just look like you're just casually browsing because you don't want to be noticed. This is like the first 8 or 9 years of the Trump era of political, the Trump political era, right, is moving slowly through the store, incrementally escalating things. People are noticing. There are people in the store going, that guy's shoplifting. That guy keeps grabbing things and putting into his jacket. But he's still moving in a way where it's like, there's plausible deniability there. It's the Lego flag, right? It's the Lego swastika flag. There are certain people that can see it. There are certain people that are noticing it, but it's not obvious enough. At the moment when someone actually, when someone who works for the store, works for security at this store, notices this person and says, stop right there, you know, you're going to be detained for shoplifting. Now that person has no choice but to bolt. They got to run. So now they are sprinting for the exit. Whereas before, they were incrementally moving at this kind of slow, methodical pace. Now it is a sprint for the exit. And there's no other option but to haul ass. And that's what's happening now. Ever since the inauguration, when it was revealed that they are indeed Nazis, intent on doing Nazi things, that they are who we always thought they are, they've had no choice but to be in a dead sprint. They are in a dead sprint toward their dystopian utopia. And they will need to be forcibly stopped. Just like a shoplifter heading for the doors, they are not going to willingly stop at this point. They will need to be forcibly stopped. And that's where we're at right now. So, yeah, that's cool. Back to other Austin. Let's see what the TikTok Digital Studio audience has to say. We've got about 230 people here. They've been having a lively discussion. Her Social Takes just asked, what do you think is next? Well, next, I believe, is what I just said, which is that they're going to start kidnapping and disappearing legal citizens. And I think eventually it's going to be people who don't fit the conventional profile of what most conservative, you know, people think of as like illegals or criminals. And what I mean by that is people who are not brown. And I feel like if anything can get the attention of the Trump cult, it might be that, but I'm not even sure about that. But that will be what it is. Is like they're going to start kidnapping and disappearing white people. And once that happens, people like me are going to be going, okay, what's the excuse now? Is that white guy from Cleveland, Ohio? Is he a member of MS-13? What's the fucking excuse? It's going to be something. It's going to be some insane shit. They're either going to pretend like that's not happening. They're going like, or Steve Miller is just going to tell them, you know, tell them, don't worry about it. I had one guy that responded who just said, I want to read this specifically. He just said, I go with Steve Miller, who has confirmed he's illegal and he has strong ties with violent gangs. Bye. And like, that's so fucking terrifying. That people are literally just going, I don't give a shit what the Supreme Court says. I don't give a shit whether or not it can be proven in court. I do what Steve Miller says. If Steve Miller says that it's cool, bye, which means a person like that will just take Steve Miller and Caroline Leavitt's word on anything. So I do think that that's the next stage of the escalation. What happens after that? I don't know. But again, like I said earlier, this kind of train that only moves in one direction and only gets progressively worse tends to only have one final destination, and it's usually not good. It's usually some kind of violent revolt. Like I said it earlier, they're not going to be debated away from what they're doing. They're not going to be like convinced to scale back the totalitarian brutality that they're carrying out by some process of rational, logical debate. Yell says, what can we do? Feels so hopeless just watching this happen. You know, we do need to kind of reconfigure and get back to work as a coalition, because I just watched a Taylor Lorenz YouTube video about the sort of death of the resistance, and I was watching it kind of on top of all this other news going, fuck, she's not wrong. She's not wrong at all. We used to have a much more robust resistance. There was a really robust, like, popular resistance through Trump's first 8 or so years of his political career, and I kind of think that Kamala losing in November took the air and the wind out of the resistance. I think that the Biden-Harris administration's support of Israel during the bombing campaign after October 7th began the sort of dissolution of the strength of the coalition in the community, and it began this sort of period of like infighting that was really, really hard to overcome. But losing the election when so many of us felt that like renewed energy, when Biden dropped out and we got that renewed burst of energy and we all felt, oh, actually, this is the most energy I've seen behind a political candidate since like Barack Obama. This is really exciting. And then to lose anyway, and to lose not just an electoral in the electoral vote, but in the popular vote, and to see like 7 million people who voted for Joe Biden drop off and be no-shows for that election, I think really took the wind out of the sails. Because even though April 5th was a very big day, it still wasn't as big as the Women's March in March of 2017. He's already talking about invading other countries, invading sovereign nations, wanting to take over places like Greenland, wanting to make Canada a new state of the United States. It's going to take expansionism for other countries' governments to start saying, is it worth it to start, you know, getting involved in some kind of military action with the United States. And who knows, if that happens, we might start seeing armed resistance movements that are part of a boots on the ground initiative to try to oppose this government. And again, that's kind of what I'm pointing at when I say the train only goes in one direction. It's kind of there now, because the kind of grassroots political resistance movement is really out of gas right now. And we've got to find a way quick to regain our footing and start pushing back. In the short term, I would just say, keep saying it. Keep saying what's true. Keep telling your Trump-supporting family members and Trump cultist members in your family what is happening. And that's what I'm trying to do with my platform, at the very least, is just keep saying what's happening. Keep saying what's true. Even though, I'll be completely honest with you, I'm kind of scared to be saying this publicly right now. I'm scared that there's going to be a record of me calling this what it is and talking about how the destination of this train is probably going to be some kind of violent resistance, because I'm scared that the government's going to be able to make a case that I am a violent dissident, that a violent criminal who's promoting domestic terrorism and needs to be disappeared. And yeah, and somebody just said there absolutely is a record. And I don't know, like, I feel like what's going to be required of us right now is courage and bravery, and we're gonna have to be willing to have it on record that we opposed this. Yeah, I think I gotta call it there, everybody. Thank you so much for the lively discussion. Thank you to everyone in the TikTok Digital Studio audience, except for Nate. Nate, I hope you have a really terrible life, and I hope that really bad things happen to you. I hope everything that you deserve happens. Everybody else, thank you so much for your feedback. Thank you for your comments. Thank you for contributing to the conversation. I'm sorry that it was such a heavy conversation. It is just sort of where we are right now. If you would like a full unedited version of this episode, Go check it out on patreon.com/AustinArcher. That will include the full TikTok talkback. I do a whole talkback with the TikTok studio audience. I'll include a few of those in the video version on YouTube. But the full version of that, the version where I lose my cool on Nate and believe you me, it's fun. I lose my absolute shit on this guy named Nate. And if you want to watch that, you got to go to Patreon, patreon.com/AustinArcher. That's all linked in the description. Go check that out for me. Shout out to the Patreon patrons. Thank you for your support. Thank you for helping to keep this show afloat. Speaking of this show, let's wrap it up. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. Check out links for all of my music in the description of this video. Links to all of my stuff, all the stuff you could ever possibly want to know about, okay? It's all there. Check out the Wonder Podcast, my new podcast that I do with my best friend Kramer England, where we just talk about movies. It's much more lighthearted. If you feel really bogged down after this episode and you need a palate cleanser, head on over to the Wonder Podcast, THEONER, where we're just talking about different movies that we've watched. It's a lot more laid back, okay? And it's a fun show. Go do that. That's it, you know? Until next time, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Love you so much. Bye-bye.